Maybe you wouldn't expect me to start my sermon off with these words. Yesterday, at the royal wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, the preacher was American Bishop Michael Curry, the first black man to preside over the Episcopal Church, and a descendant of slaves and sharecroppers from Carolina and Alabama. He began and ended his sermon there in the Windsor Castle with quotes from Martin Luther King, from whom we Unitarian Universalists got our concept of beloved community, of which we will speak today. Bishop Curry said in his sermon, and I will not pretend to be as fiery as he was, but here's an excerpt. "Think and imagine a world," he said, "when love is the way. Imagine our homes and families when love is the way. Imagine neighborhoods and communities when love is the way. Imagine governments and nations when love is the way. Imagine business and commerce when love is the way. Imagine this tired old world when love is the way. When love is the way, unselfish, sacrificial, redemptive, then no child will go hungry in this world ever again. When love is the way, we will let justice roll down like a mighty stream and righteousness like an ever-flowing brook. When love is the way, poverty will become history. When love is the way, the earth will be a sanctuary. When love is the way, we will lay down our swords and shields down by the riverside to study war no more. That's a new heaven, a new earth, a new world, a new human family." For Reverend Dr. King, this kind of transformative love was foundational to building beloved community. But as I've said many times before, this love is not an easy, sentimental love. This love, like Curry said, is a redemptive, sacrificial love which can transform even the hardest of hearts, even the staunchest of enemies. And this love is a fight, not a fight which injures other, but a struggle which must be taken on and upheld with a fierce commitment. But never alone. Never alone. The struggle must always be undertaken in and through community. The lack of community in our society is painful. Loneliness and isolation have become an epidemic. The walls between social groups become stronger. The sociologist Robert Putnam diagnosed this lapse of community 18 years ago in his book, Bowling Alone. And even 200 years before that, Tocqueville warned that the decay of community would threaten our American democracy. Individualism runs strong in the U.S. in particular. We often go from work to home to work to home, alone in our cars. If we have families, we rarely move beyond family structures, and often we live far from our extended family. We rarely have friends outside of our race and class. As a minister, I also see individualism in the privatization of spirituality, the idea that one can be religious or spiritual all by oneself. Our UU tradition teaches us that while, yes, our individual conscience is important, in fact, the individual is a fiction. We are all composed of one another, interwoven and interconnected, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not. And the more we forget this, the more our lives, both our individual lives and our common life, deteriorate. The American poet Carl Sandburg became a committed member of the Unitarian Church in Asheville, North Carolina. And this is why. He said, "You can't go tramping around from parish to parish and build anything up. Who would want to go on a picnic all the time and eat out of other people's baskets? You've got to feel the importance of your own individual participation in its life." This emphasis on community was a primary contribution of the great Unitarian minister and professor, James Luther Adams. See, our Unitarian tradition, one of the ways it was groundbreaking was its focus on the individual. Think of all the transcendentalists and their focus on the individual conscience, and I can have opinions regardless of what the bishops or the thinks. But we kind of swung pretty far that direction. So people like James Luther Adams came in and said things like, "By their groups ye shall know them. By their groups ye shall know them." So with what groups are we each a part? James Luther stressed the importance of our free church tradition as being a group of diverse believers who of their own choice join together in the spirit of love, even amidst ongoing, inevitable, but respectful dissent and discussion. I believe that in and through community, the world can be saved. But there's a difference between pseudo-community, where members feel comfortable and confirmed among like minds, and genuine community, a growing connection that requires commitment and risk, growth and reconciliation, honesty. Genuine community is beloved community, where differences are not merely tolerated and not overlooked or watered down, but explored and celebrated, where we are paradoxically welcomed as we are, just as we are, and encouraged to grow and risk through engagement with others different from us. Howard Thurman, community cannot for long feed on itself. It can only flourish with the coming of others from beyond, their unknown and undiscovered siblings. A beloved community is created when we risk being ourselves as we are and encountering others as they are. So when we see someone who has navigated the world differently from us, we can develop a habit of becoming curious rather than judgmental. When someone with a different background tells us, "This is what I need in order to feel safe," we listen. When someone with less power in our world asks us to work with them to redistribute that power, we join in the struggle. That's what love, redemptive, sacrificial love, is about. That's what creates beloved community. As the poet Mark Nepo wrote, "Unconditional love is not so much about how we receive and endure each other, as it is about the deep vow to never, under any condition, stop bringing the flawed truth of who we are to each other." So what a joy that today we will celebrate a new member ceremony in our church. In this ceremony, we honor, not just for these few members, but for all those that have joined or committed to this church, we honor the risk of joining something beyond ourselves, of committing to something bigger than that fiction of our individual lives. And what a joy that today, after the service, we hold a potluck lunch and a congregational meeting. To this lunch, we bring dishes, and we bring our different selves, even when we're awkward and not sure who to sit with, even when we're not sure if we're ready to reach out to that new person, but do it anyway. That creates beloved community. Even though there will be those who did not know today was a potluck, we always have enough food to go around, especially because some anticipate that, and they bring extra. That creates beloved community. And at the congregational meeting, we'll discuss a budget formed from the contributions of you all, our members and friends, who pledge some of your hard-earned livelihoods so this community can keep living into that vision to be a beloved community. We may disagree at times over the lines and the figures and the values in the budget. It is good, because it is important to discuss these things, to welcome alternative voices, to explore our values and how to live them out in the world. That creates beloved community. Choosing to keep coming back, to return again and again to community, is not always easy. It involves a shift in our priorities and our habits. Community often means discomfort sometimes. The Quaker Parker Palmer says, "Community is that place where the person you least want to live with always lives." But we keep coming back, and we learn, and we grow, and the rewards of community are astounding, it turns out, and often even life-saving. Indeed, the creation of beloved community is the only thing that will save the world. I end with the poet Adrian Rich. "My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who age after age, perversely, with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world." It is good to be together. May it be so.